Hi, this is Susie Larson, and thank you so much for listening to Live the Promise today. Our website is filled with even more powerful and encouraging interviews. Learn more by logging on to myfaithradio.com. Welcome to Hour 2 of Live the Promise. Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson, and if you just tuned in, you missed my first hour conversation with comedian, author Phil Calloway. We had a great time laughing together and talking about God's grace. Also very excited about Hour 2 because my good friend Dr. Greg Smalley joins me again on the show. I always love having him, and we're kind of going through 12 different traits of highly happy, successful marriages. And so today we're going to devote the whole show to cherishing your spouse. So I don't want to waste another moment. Let me tell you about him, and we'll get him on the show. Dr. Greg Smalley serves as Executive Director of Marriage and Family Formation at Focus on the Family. He's the author of 11 books, including The DNA of Relationships and The Wholehearted Marriage and Fight Your Way to a Better Marriage. It probably is 12 or 13 books by now. Greg and his wife, Erin, live in Colorado with their three daughters, Taylor, Murphy, Annie, and their son, Garrison. And you can find his author page on our website at myfaithradio.com. Welcome back, Doc.
It is always great to be with you. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. It's been a month, I think, and you've traveled. Your daughter's had surgery, and your dad's, I think, out of the hospital now, right?
It's been a very busy, busy season for us. You're right. Our youngest daughter, Annie, had successful surgery on her to close a hole in her eardrum, and also some palate surgery. She had cleft lip and palate when she was born. And that's all, it went perfectly, and so she's just continuing to recover from that. Mm-hmm. My dad is out of the rehab hospital where he was recovering from cardiac surgery. And, he's doing much better, getting stronger. It's just a long road for him, 75, so it's just taken a while. But we're neighbors, so my mom... Just, you know, anytime something's going on, she's able to call us. And she called me the other day and said, Dad was on the floor to get something. He can't get up. And I'm like, that's like that commercial. I've fallen and I can't get up. So I race up there and I'm helping him up. And it's like my life now. And,
yeah.
And it's what I'm telling you what, though. I mean, we're talking about cherishing. And what a privilege and honor it is to return the care that my dad gave me for so many, many years and continues care for me in lots of ways. But what a different shift in a relationship.
Yeah, it's
the
season
of
life.
You've gone through this.
I love that they're down the road from you and that you can just walk down there, run down there if you need to. But it's got to be a great assurance for them, and what a blessing for you.
It's more of a brisk walk.
Yeah.
I'm not much of a runner, but so if they need something quick, I got to get in the car because I would huff and puff my way. Take too long.
I don't know why, Greg, but every time I think about, I mean, we've been over there and walked down the road to visit your parents, but I cannot get the picture out of my mind of your dad when you were growing up, your dad napping with his head back and his mouth open, and you and your brother putting the bark collar next to his neck. And didn't you bark behind him? Like, was it Michael holding the... That's terrible.
Yeah. I talked my younger brother into putting a shock collar on his throat, and then I barked as loud as I could. And it zapped him, and he shot up out of that chair like someone had, well, I guess we did literally electrocute him. He shot up and ran out of the house. I mean, he was gone.
He left you.
We weren't quite sure what happened, but he was gone, only to find out that he thought the fire alarm had gone off because there was a bell. There was like an alarm sound associated with it. And we thought that was the funniest thing. And so I really thought about it and went, so as our father, the first thing you did upon hearing the fire alarm was to run out of the house. And that's when he went, maybe I should have looked around for you boys. So
exactly. And, you can only accuse him for so long, Greg.
Now.
I was going to say, you can only accuse him for so long because you actually were the one who shocked him and made him run. So anyway, Bless his little heart. What a guy. Well, you know the drill, Greg. We love to start talking, start our conversations talking scripture. I'm wondering if there is a verse that you'd like to start the conversation with today.
I think as we talk about valuing, cherishing our spouse, very interesting verse, Ephesians 5:29, that says, "No one ever hated his own flesh, but nourishes it and cherishes it, just as Christ does the church." There's something about some words in there that can radically change a marriage, and one of those words is the idea of cherishing. We here at Focus on the Family, we did a large study, and we really looked at all the research that's ever been done on, you know, healthy marriage, why are couples happy, all these things, long-term couples, studying what happens, what goes on. And we really did find that there were about 12 things that emerged, and one of them is our ability to really to recognize our spouse's value and to kind of keep that front and center. Because, you know, we get busy, or maybe there's some problems, and when we get busy or conflict or something sets in, it's very easy to lose sight of how valuable our spouse is. And there's that verse in Luke 12:34 that says, "Where your treasure is, so there will your heart be also." And I think that's what's significant, is that what I value, what I treasure, see, that's what I turn towards, that's what I am open to. And that's why that this is so important. As good as it is for my wife Erin to feel and to know that I value her, and that's a good thing. I think that helps her to feel safe. It has a powerful effect on me as her husband. The more I value her, the more I see her as a treasure, the more likely than I am to be drawn towards her. And that only is going to benefit our marriage.
You know, there's a proverb that says your own soul is nourished when you are kind. And I think that's such a concept of what you're saying. In fact, you can use that and take credit for it if you'd like later. Write it down.
Hey, your I own... already did. It's already happened. Thank you.
You're so welcome. But, you know, you talk about your early years of marriage and how you're walking into marriage thinking, "I'm Gary Smalley's son. How hard can this be?" And I love how honest you are about some of the bumpy roads you guys traveled on. And when you think about whether that hard stuff happens in those early years or maybe it kicks in later on, we all go through it. And the tendency, I think, Greg, when we go through it is like you say, fight or flight, or to first and foremost, defend yourself, kind of take your stance. But you can't really cherish your spouse when you're defending yourself. And yet that's the instinctive response when things are hard. So I want you to just take us back to those early years when all of a sudden things were disrupted for you and they were surprisingly hard for you. When did the light bulb go on for you, and how did it go on for you to suddenly go, "I'm feeling like I'm on the receiving end of conflict, but she's still someone of great worth"? I mean, how did that light bulb go on for you?
You know, one day, Aaron and I had probably been married, let's say, 3 years. So it's real early on in our marriage, and we poorly managed conflict. That was our sort of Achilles heel. Loved her. She was always, had been one of my very best friends in college. And so we always had a great friendship. We were always able to laugh together, to play together, went to church, loved the Lord, all these things. I was in seminary learning how to be a marriage counselor, ironically. So all that was there. We had a really hard time when it came to just our disagreements and the way in which we tried to manage when we disagreed or were in a power struggle, whatever, just didn't work. And the more we fought, the more our hearts closed. And Susie really got to a place to where my heart really began to harden towards my wife, and her heart began to harden towards me. I wasn't aware of that. I had no way to articulate that. Felt it. Began to feel distant from her. I felt coldness towards her. I began to question my love for her. You know, when our hearts are hardened, you don't feel the love. So it's naturally it's a very natural experience to go, "Well, thus, oh, maybe we don't love each other. Oh, maybe we weren't supposed to get married. Maybe this wasn't my soul," whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but where she challenged me one time, and it sort of lifted the veil a little bit for me in terms of what was really going on, to where she said, "You know what, Greg, it seems like it doesn't matter what I do, that you are always going to see me in a negative light." And I think that's one of the consequences of when we can't really work through some things and our hearts begin to harden within a relationship, we develop negative beliefs. And I began to see my wife through this negative lens. And I began to just notice those things. Those things became more prominent. They were more obvious. Wow, look at all the bad stuff that she's doing, ignoring, of course, a lot of the good. And she challenged me one day. And I think that that's when I kind of went, it's because you are. You know, you are doing all those things. And I think I realized that, wow, I really have some strong negative beliefs about her. And I had a mentor, a good friend of mine, who I kind of went and said, here's what she's accusing me of, and let me tell you all that stuff that she's doing. And so there's no way that's true, and I'm right. And he really challenged me, saying, now, your lens is so negative towards her. And this guy, this good friend, this mentor of mine, really said, if you want to fight this, the solution is that you have to really actively look for the things that she's doing that please you, that encourage you, that are good. And even if it's, hey, she grabbed my empty cereal bowl off the table today, you know, and took it to the sink for me. You know, it sometimes we have to start off, we're so mad and so entrenched in all this negativity that sometimes it's just looking and noticing those little things. But I think what it began to do is I really began to recapture why my wife is so valuable. And see, I'd lost that. And when you don't value someone, then you are going to treat them in ways that aren't very valuable. And so maybe ignoring or not being a great listener, not trying to validate her. I mean, think of how many things can go wrong if I'm really not valuing my wife.
Indeed. And we touched on this negative belief last time, but I think it is important to just visit while we unpack what it means to cherish, because when you have a negative belief, I think, Greg, it's something we have to repent of, because I've met plenty of couples who have the lens up and they think they have it there because the spouse is so defective, when really they've been building a case and so now they're seeing wrongly. So when we come back, maybe just give us a few steps for how to get rid of a negative belief so that you can start to see them as made in God's image and then move towards cherishing your spouse. How about that? And maybe you've got questions for Greg. 877-933-2484, 877-933-2484. More with Dr. Greg Smalley in just a moment.
For my husband, confessing my sins when I'm in the midst of an argument. Obviously, arguments have selfish motivations that are at the core. I don't do a good job at that, but when I do that, that helps us be strong.
Thanks for tuning in today. I'm Susie Larson. This is Hour 2 of Live the Promise. I have my good friend Dr. Greg Smalley on the air. We're talking about cherishing your spouse. And before the break, Greg, we were talking about that negative belief. And you've identified this as such a key, it's really a roadblock to intimacy. And I think it has to be a roadblock to cherishing your spouse. Because if you can't see them as somebody that's worth valuing, even your best efforts will be kind of going through the motions. So how does a person, if they're listening today and thinking, okay, I've got an account against my spouse. First of all, let's do this. How do you know if you have a negative belief? You know, you see some of these articles, you might have a negative belief if you, 1, 2, 3, 4, give us a few kind of symptoms of someone who might have a negative belief towards their spouse and not even realize it.
I think it's a situation where when I see my wife, I'm convinced that maybe she's out to make me miserable, that she never does anything good for me. So I think part of it is recognizing when we slip into sort of this all or nothing, these exaggerated descriptions, you just, you know, nothing that I ever do is ever good enough for you. I think it's when we see them in such a negative light that when we interpret what they're doing, we tend to go to the negative part of what that might mean. Versus, you know, when someone doesn't have a negative belief, they're way more likely, way quicker to give someone the benefit of the doubt, to give them grace, to redefine something they did is an accidental, they didn't mean that, you know, they're just having a hard day, versus when I have a negative belief, man, I'm not giving anybody grace, I'm not giving Erin the benefit of the doubt, I know exactly what she meant, it's just one more piece of evidence in this whole jar that I have. When I used to teach this a long time ago, the idea is I had like these little cotton balls in this big jar and so the negative beliefs is when all I pick out. So you dump all these good things and bad things that someone does on a table. And what I'm doing is I'm scanning the table looking for all the negatives and putting those in the jar as evidence that I could genuinely hold up at the end of the day and say, Susie, look, I mean, look who I live with. I mean, look at all these things that she did today that were hurtful. And it's not that those things aren't true. Again, the negative belief might, you know, exacerbate those things or might
blow them out of those.
Exaggerate. Mm-hmm. That was the word I was looking mm-hmm. for. Thank you. You're like my thesaurus. You know, but so I think that's what's going on when we have the negative beliefs. The sad part is we are actually missing the good of who they are, but also of what they do. It just, and I'm telling you, I think part of how you fight that, first and foremost, you have to be willing to acknowledge that there's a spiritual battle going on here. You see, Satan, father of lies, is so committed to us of seeing our spouse in that negative light. And it's like he's a little parrot on your shoulder just echoing, see, look, once again, don't love you. Here's the evidence. Look, they'll never change. Always going to see you in this way. So part of it is just to know that there's an enemy that we have mm-hmm. against our marriage who is going to do yeah. everything that he can in his power to make me see my wife in such a negative way.
In 1 Corinthians 13, the chapter, love chapter, talks about love keeps no account. And that's exactly what it's talking about. Another
Absolutely.
Place in the chapter, it says love believes the best. It almost seems like those are the, you know, opposing forces sort of. So if someone is listening going, okay, you got me. I've got a negative belief against my spouse. I've assigned motives. And, you know, I tell them what they meant and they say, no, I didn't. And they're never off the hook in my mind. What are some steps they can take so they can move towards cherishing their spouse?
I think the attitude is we have to be willing to give our spouse the benefit of the doubt in terms of the interpretations that we're making against them. When Erin does something, if I have a negative belief, see, I'm always going to draw the worst conclusion about her. And the more that I believe in my interpretation, in the conclusion, the perception of what's really going on, see, that's the problem we get into. So to fight that, I have to be willing to do this. Although I think I know exactly what she just meant, maybe I missed it. Maybe I'm wrong. There's a humility there that I think a prideful response is, I know exactly what you meant by that. And God gives his grace only to who? To the humble. So I think if we approach it as, well, you know, I'm pretty certain I know what's going on here, but, you know, it actually could be wrong. One, what that does is it allows us to say, hey, what did you mean by what just happened or what you just did? Oh, okay. Mm. Oh, I get it. Okay. Oh, all right. So that's one way to fight it. But I think the other, there was a great, really cool study that I saw one time in couples who were in trouble and in for counseling. The counselor, this particular counselor, gave them only one piece of homework. This was right after the first session, and said, okay, your job is to go home and all you're allowed to do is write down the positive things that you noticed that your spouse did. So again, you know, taking the cereal bowl, whatever, anything. And he's like, make it as a competition. I'm going to, you know, judge who had the most, you know, whose list was the longest. And surprisingly, then when those couples came back the next week, it was like 70% of them reported a significant improvement in their relationship. And they were like, man, whatever you did, you're like the best counselor ever. And he's going, I didn't do anything. You did it. You just started looking for what was always there all along, and that's the positive stuff.
Well, you think about it, Greg. You know when people kind of have your number and they're summing you up, and they're when they're with you, they're sort of getting information so they can build a case. Whether that's a spouse.
How I feel with
or,
you when I'm on radio. Yes, so
you're
yes,
killing
me,
Smalls. I've always wanted to say that when we did the show together, and I always thought of it after. I want just once. You're killing me, Smalls. Never thought of
the
saying
the play
that.
Lot. That's a good. See? Well, that's a great movie. Anyway, nice. Yeah.
But do you really feel like that around me? You better not.
The radio went out. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you. No, I was kidding.
Sandlot. Okay. All right. So, but you know what I'm saying, though? When people have, you know that they're not pure in heart towards you,
right.
And maybe they're gathering information. What do? You want to guard yourself. But you know when someone loves you and has grace for you, those tend to be your inner court friends. And don't you think, as spouses, that's our sacred duty and right to fight for that place, even if it doesn't come natural to us?
Absolutely, and that's the idea of cherishing. Cherishing simply means that we are recognizing the value that's there. And in those moments that I forget, what's true is that just because I don't see it, it doesn't mean that my wife has lost her value. What's true is that my wife is valuable. I mean, think of it. God said that she's made in his image. He said that she is his treasured possession. Jesus said that Aaron, my wife, is his glorious inheritance. You know, that's what's true. And I have to admit that there's times that I get mad and wounded and hurt and frustrated by her, and I stop seeing her in a valuable way. That negative lens.
So what do you do when that happens?
Well, I think that what we always have to do is get back to going, this person who I live with, who I committed my life to, is in fact, according to God, an extremely valuable person. That's what's actually true about them. Remember, you will know the truth, and the truth will what?
Set
us free. And so I think any time truth is our true north. You know, on a compass, we want that true north because that's what we can trust. In God, his truth is our true north. And in this case, about my wife, what is true is that she's incredibly valuable. And when I am keenly aware of how incredibly valuable she is, what happens is that word, remember we use Ephesians 5:29 where it talks about really cherishing one another. That word cherish, it's so interesting. In the Greek, that word means to feel warm. So in other words, when I cherish my wife, what she ends up feeling is warmth. I mean, think about a sunflower. You know, a sunflower, what's so cool, during the day will track the sun. Wherever that sun is, that sunflower is actually going to move and track the arc of the sun. And see, that's what I want for my wife. I want when she is around me to track me. I want her to feel warm. I mean, that's a good thing. What it's doing is creating safety in her, but that's a great experience. And that comes from the way that we cherish one another, really recognizing their value. And that's what I like about that word is it means to warm. So that's the benefit, one of the benefits of really valuing our spouse, cherishing them.
We just have a moment before we go to break, but one of the things you say, and you might want to pick this up on the other side of the break, is to stay curious about your mate. And I love that because I think that's one way to cherish, because to say, you're interesting enough, even after all these years, life changes us. So I know life changes you. Tell me some new dreams. You know, like you said, keep updated on and current with your spouse. Just say a word about that before we go to break.
It is one of the best ways that we can value someone it's the opposite of boredom.
Mm-hmm.
When we're curious about them, we're acknowledging that you're constantly changing, and that's a good thing. And as a matter of fact, that's such a cool thing that I'm going to keep tracking to make sure that I stay current with you, stay updated. What is going on in your life? In the net, the message is that you're valuable enough for me to stay up on what is going on in your life and with you.
Talking about cherishing your spouse, now's the time to call 877-933-2484. More with Doc Smalley in a moment.
Yeah. the key, at least in my own mind, has been to know what a grace and undeserved kindness it is to have my wife and to show her honor rather than, you know, just what my mood might happen to be at the moment.
Wow, good word. We've got some pretty amazing listeners. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise, talking to my good friend, Dr. Greg Smalley, about what it means to cherish your spouse. And Greg, before the break, we were talking about something that, you know, I was saying you really impacted me during that full year that we did Everyday Relationships. So many good tips to take with us. And one that you talked about off and on was the idea of staying current on your spouse, staying updated, because our dreams change, our fears change. And so to value each other enough to say, you know, to keep an updated kind of conversation going. So maybe talk about practical ways you can do that in a way that isn't administrating your marriage, isn't going to go down the road of a fight, hopefully, but just really is one of those honoring relationships where it's actually romantic because you're staying up on each other.
It's a statement of value. Mm-hmm. And again, the key is to understand that your spouse's value doesn't change simply because of your inability to recognize it. What is true about my wife, what's true about your spouse is that they're incredibly valuable. One of the ways that you can put that idea of cherishing and give it some legs, put it into action, is with this attitude that one lifetime isn't ever long enough to truly to get to know you. Mm. That I think that I had slipped early on in our marriage into this idea that I had spent so much time really asking my wife great questions and when we were dating and engaged and I felt like, oh, I know her so well. I know so much about her that I think what it kept me from doing then was really being curious to stay current. And I remember one of the saddest counseling sessions that I ever did was a guy that in the middle of our conversation, and I was kind of talking about this idea of just being curious about someone. And he just said, he goes, well, I pride myself on that. I know everything there is to know about her. She's pretty simple. And I know everything there is to know about her. He's like, test me, ask me anything. And I just said, just the simple fact that that's what you believe really makes me sad, because there isn't enough time in this lifetime to get to know her, because I guarantee that she's always changing. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
Change isn't a bad thing. It's reality. So if I'm going to cherish and value my wife, part of what I can do is just make a commitment that, well, I'm not going to get bored in our relationship. I'm going to be curious. I'm going to stay current. I'm going to ask you questions. Aaron and I, we did a donor event for Focus on the Family in the Grand Cayman Islands.
So, you poor thing.
I know. It was terrible last week. But we went out to dinner. We just had kind of a date night. The couples were all doing something else, and it was so much fun. We just sat at this really great restaurant eating some seafood, looking out at the ocean. And all we did was just talk about our bucket lists. You know, Aaron, what are you dreaming about? What are some things that you really want to do? And just trying to be curious. And I tell you, without fail, she always comes up with something new that I hadn't heard before. And it was so much fun just to hear her. She would love to get her PhD. And just to hear that, how can I then be a dream maker? How can I help her accomplish that and see that dream realized? But that's, I think, a part of it is just to stay current on dreams, what's in your heart, what are you hoping will happen before you die, those kinds of things. A lot of things that we can ask each other. And I usually ask her, how are you feeling emotionally? How are you doing emotionally? How are things going between you and your girlfriends? Because friends, female friendships are so important in her life. She's written on that. How are things going between you and the kids? And then the last one I ask her is, what is one thing that God's been teaching you as of late? And even if we took those four questions alone, I promise you'll have to rotate them. Because I usually, if I say, how are you doing emotionally, you know, 2 hours later, you know, I'm still learning. And that's good.
That's
and I don't
awesome.
Mean that in a disparaging way.
Well, tell me this. Do men feel cherished in a different way than women? And how? Okay, say more.
Okay, so I would say for a woman, and Susie, please correct me on behalf of all
You're
women
wrong.
If I miss this.
I don't even
this.
Care what you say. You're wrong.
I think that there's an element for a woman that she longs to be cherished by being captive, by captivating her husband.
Mm-hmm.
That
right.
When he sees her, that he's just like, wow. man, you're amazing, and look at these qualities, and how much
you're
I treasure.
You're the one that I want. Yep.
Yeah, I think, hey, in Proverbs 18:22, it says a man's greatest treasure is his wife. It didn't say that the wife's greatest treasure is her husband. And I think because intentionally there's something when a wife feels that her husband sees her as a treasure. He's captivated by her beauty, by her value, by who she really is. It just seems like that a wife is just drawn to that. I use this example of a Stradivarius violin. And I have this prop when we speak, and I'll hold up this old, tattered, ugly, you know, scratches, this violin, and I'll say to people, hey, let's pretend this is an auction. You know, let me, I'm going to sell this thing. How much do you give me for it? Hey, 20 bucks, you know, 25, 30. And then I have someone in the front row look inside the violin, and you can see the where it says Stradivarius. You know, these are worth, you know, $20 million. And once they realize that it's a Stradivarius, now how much? Oh, 300,000, 400,000. I mean, it's that idea that I recognize her value, and I'm captivated by that. But I think for the man, the value statement for a man is respect, is that we want to feel respected. I think respect equals that you get my value. Respect really means it's a deep admiration for someone elicited by their abilities, qualities, or achievements. And as guys, that's what we want. I love it. Like when I'll go out and clean the garage, and then I'll walk in and say, hey, Erin, I finished cleaning the garage. Come here and look at it. And she'll walk out and she'll look at this spotless garage and go, Greggy, that looks so good. You did a fantastic job. And I'm like a dog going, yeah. You know, I'm on my belly, you know, I'm yeah. rolling around, scratch me right there, you know? And I think there's something when a man will feel respected because his wife has that sense of deep admiration for who he is, his abilities, his qualities, but also his achievements. And I think that's the key, one of the keys to a husband's heart.
You know, I know relationships can get complicated, but honor is not rocket science. It's like, you know, we've talked about this before, Greg, that as women, we're really not that hard to sweep off our feet. You know, you, as you say, care for us, love us, pursue us, because that consistent message will sweep us off our feet. But for men, it's not hard to get you to leap buildings in a single bound by honoring you and noticing what you do right. I remember Shanti Feldham, when she was on Everyday Relationships with us, yeah. you know, through vast research, learned that men would rather feel respected than loved. If they had to choose, if they had to do without one to have the other, they'd rather be made to feel competent than unloved. Or loved. And I just think that is such a loud and clear message that if our relationships are a mess right now, women, honor your husband and respect them. And husbands, pursue and love and care for your wives. I mean, that's just step one, isn't it?
It really is. And I think that the key is you have to become aware of what is it that I respect about my husband? What is it that I really do value? What captivates me by my wife, and to actually literally create a list. One of my very favorite stories. Do we have,
sure,
do we have
yeah,
a couple
no, go
minutes
ahead.
Real quick?
Yep.
Is well, my parents, I mean, they've been married 50 years, celebrated 50 years of marriage. Here's my dad, Gary Smalley, written 60 some books. And what I love about their marriage is every once in a while, they still get into a big old fight. And so this one Thanksgiving, they get into this big fight. My mom tears off in one direction. He heads the other. And so he's now in his office. And so I knock on the door and he, you know, come in. And so he's just sitting. You can just tell he's steaming and stewing there in his chair. But he's looking at the computer. So I think he's online. As I walked over by his chair, I was just going to come up and put my arm around him and say, hey, that looked brutal. You know, is there anything that I could do to help you as the experts? And I noticed that he wasn't online. He had actually pulled up a document. And I'm not making this up. This really happened. And the document said, the top of it, my mom's name is Norma. It said, why Norma is so valuable. And I just went, what are you looking at? And he goes, well, he's kind of shy. It's almost like I caught him looking at something bad, but it's this thing about my mom. And he goes, oh, a number of years ago, I was thinking about your mom, some things that I really love about her, some of my favorite things about her. I just wrote them down, and over the years, I've added to the list. Susie, I tell you, there were hundreds and hundreds of little words and phrases about my mom on this document.
And for a son to see that, because it's natural to fight. We're going to have fights. But to see the reality of that and see his response, wow.
Well, what was so funny, so I said, that's really cool. I love that you did that. But I said, Dad, why are you looking at that now? I said, aren't you mad at Mom? He goes, oh, I can't stand her. And I went, well, that's what I thought. So why now? And I tell you, I'll never forget his response. And he said this. He goes, well, he goes, I've learned over the years I can come into my office after an argument with your mom, and I can sit here and think about how mad I am and how horrible she is, and she had no right, la, 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 so disrespectful, whatever. But he said, instead, I open this up. He goes, I literally, I don't want to do it, but I make myself, and I just start to read through the list. And he goes, yeah, I'm mad at her. She goes, I get to the first couple, and I'm like, poof, you know, why did I write that? And that's not true anymore, and I'm erasing that one for sure. But he said, he goes, what's interesting, he goes, I start to really get into the list, and he goes, there's a point in time where I remember that you have an amazing mom.
Wow.
And that is where your treasure is. There will your heart be. Also, that's what my dad's learned to do to get his heart open back to my mom. And that's the power of cherishing someone. So I think on a practical way that we can implement this is create your own cherish list like
that. Well, he had to look for those things, Greg. I mean, it's easy to say, I'll do that when I'm 70 or I'll do that later. Or, I already do cherish them. But, you know, I mean, to go on a hunt and write those things down and review the list once in a while, especially when you're mad. I mean, all of that takes such intention, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, so a caller called in and said, love this conversation. I'm wondering how this concept applies to dating relationships. Is it possible to close your heart to your boyfriend, or is it only something that happens in a marriage? That's a great question. What do you say?
Well, I would differentiate between a hardened heart and a closed heart. Think of that little, what's it, pill bug, sow bug, roly-poly, you know the little bug I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That kind of when you flick at it, it just rolls itself
into a
tight
little... I have a pet one, and we call him Greg. I'm just kidding.
Greggy. Because I'm gray and I look like a big fat ball. Is that why?
No comment. I'm kidding. Keep going. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
Literally leaned back in my chair and almost went all the way over.
I wish that would happen. Anyway.
So think of the Greggy bug, okay? The little
roly-poly
that when that thing is flicked, it balls up. And that's what happens to our heart when we're hurt and offended and wounded and mad and frustrated. That in those moments, see, when we get our buttons pushed, however you want to say that, we're hurt, frustrated, our heart closes. And then we react in some way. Now, over time, a closed heart, that when we don't learn how to get our hearts back open to our spouse, over time, the danger is that closed heart can begin to fossilize until what Jesus said, well, Moses permitted you to divorce because of the what?
Hardness of your heart.
So I think that, so even definitely when you're engaged, I mean, you don't have a hard heart towards your, you know, fiance or in a dating relationship just because you would bail out of that relationship long before that. But what's significant about what she's asking is absolutely, we're human. When someone
hurts us.
With any
relationship, right?
Any relationship, when you're hurt, offended, wounded, whatever you want to call that, your heart closes. It's just the trick, and Susie, you and I used to talk about this all the time on everyday relationships. The real trick is not how to avoid conflict. The real trick isn't how to keep people from hurting you. The real trick is when it happens, how do I get my own heart back open? It's my heart. That's my job. It's actually not someone else's job to get my heart back open.
So you could blame someone all day long for your hard heart, but our job is to care for our heart. So whether, no matter if they come back or not, for one thing, we're living more healthy in our relationships. But if they do come back, the light is on, right? We're able to have a reconciliation because our heart is where it needs to be.
Absolutely. Greatest commandment. Love God, love others as you love yourself. Love God with all your what?
Heart.
That's the first thing in the list.
Yeah, so
I think
good.
That's why it's so important.
Okay, Greg, we have a caller that said, appreciate Greg's transparency. I'm in the middle of this with my own wife, and it's true that many of the issues in marriage start and end with yourself. And so we're going to talk more about what it means to cherish and just be intentional about speaking value to your spouse. Don't go away. And this is your last chance to call in if you've got a question for Greg. 877-933-2484. 877-933-2484. We'll be right back.
It's the, you know, Lord, please bless our marriage, please bless our family, and keep us strong in you and your word. But it's talk about it. It's don't hide it. Don't have something slip in here. So, oh, didn't I tell you about that? Oh, I thought I told you about that. It's just make sure you communicate.
Make sure you communicate. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Susie Larson. This is Live the Promise. So glad to have Dr. Greg Smalley with us today talking about such an important component, cherish your spouse. You know, we're approaching the holidays now, Greg, and family dynamics can bring up marital issues, because it's interesting how you can sort of revert back to your childhood role when you go back to your family of origin.
Really? I never knew that.
Really? What else can I teach you?
You can teach me how not to do that as I go home for Thanksgiving.
Anyway, so what do you say, though, about just honoring your marriage, still honoring your families and being loving? Because you can sometimes, I think, I don't know if I'm going to say this the right way, but guard your marriage to the point where you almost come off as selfish, like, that doesn't work for us, that doesn't work for us. Do you know what I'm saying? So to have some honor in the way that you show up in your relationships, but to prioritize your marriage, how do you do that in a way that communicates that you cherish your spouse?
Well, I think if we're trying to cherish and value someone, we've got to eventually make that an action. We've got to do something. And I agree with you. I think prioritizing our spouse sends a message that you matter. I want to spend time with you. I want to give you attention. Because why? Well, because you're valuable. I treasure you. I respect you. I think all of that, it shows that when I give my wife the time and attention that she needs, that and prioritize her, the good news is that at the end of the day, that's the message that it shows. Really interesting verse, 1 Peter 3:7. Go check this one out. I'm telling you, it's really cool. It says, be considerate as you live with your wife and show her honor. Here, the Greek word show, it translates to mean to assign. In other words, to assign her honor. It's this idea of payment, to pay her honor. What do we owe our wife in terms of what Peter's saying here? It's we owe her value. We need to see her as someone who is so incredibly valuable. And I think that's so important for both to do that. I think another practical way then to show someone value, to show someone honor, is our gratefulness, our the way that we're thankful. Here we are on the edge of what's
Thanksgiving.
The big holiday coming up. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I'm just kidding. Mm-hmm. See, well, you jumped in really fast, mm-hmm. by the way.
And you were making me nervous. Anyway.
What is that boy on right now? Because it's not good. You, Susie, tell me the title of your book, because it's a great book in terms of teaching kids.
Growing Grateful Kids.
Yes, mm-hmm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I should always know that. Mm-hmm. But the idea is how important it is to teach our kids to be grateful, but that's the only way they're going to learn that is first and foremost. They're going to see that I value my wife enough to look for things that she's done during the day and express my gratitude. I loved saying to couples that imagine what a marriage would be like if one of the very last things that your spouse hears from you before you guys both drift off to sleep is just something that you notice that they did during the day that you really appreciate and are grateful for. I mean, think about it. What an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know, here we are. We're laying in bed. We're about to drift off to sleep. What if I just said, hey, by the way, Aaron, you know, thanks for taking our 17-year-old daughter today to the eye doctor. You know, I know you had a lot going on. You were busy. I was busy. But you did that. You know, thank you. Mm-hmm. I love it that you do that. You prioritize our kids and you help them, whatever.
That is honoring, isn't it? And let's talk about honoring in crowds, like at parties, because a lot of Christmas parties are coming. And And, you know, there's times where it can be so mushy that you can tell that they're applying the principles they've read out of a recent marriage book. You know what I'm saying? You know, here I'm going to scoot next to my husband, and isn't he amazing? And it feels a little disingenuous. But on the flip side, we can kind of throw each other under the bus if we're not careful by just, you know, bantering or even exposing them, you know, something, some way they blew it, where we feel suddenly you're like, oh my goodness, that's totally embarrassing to me. So what does honor look like in that setting? And is that something you consult with your spouse to find out what the lines are, or are there just some standard practices that are wise to keep?
Well, I'd look at it two ways. One, on the what to avoid part of that. I remember when I was brand new married husband, we were somewhere talking to a guy. He'd been married like 50 years. And so I just said, hey, you know, 50 years, wow. I said, what, like, give me one piece of advice. And I loved what he said. He said, don't ever, ever let someone catch you saying something negative about your wife.
Mm.
And I just went, like, that's the key.
Wow.
that's one of them. And I agree. I think that is one of them. On the flip side, the idea of complimenting them. I think that maybe you should find out if they want you to do that or not. But in second thought, you know what? I love how you model to other people when like if Aaron comes up to me and just said, hey, did Greg tell you about what he did today? And he did this amazing job doing such and such, or just
she's
coming
great
up,
at that, by the way.
She really is.
Yeah.
Yes. I wish I was. But coming up, maybe, you know, I like it when she's, you know, in a group of other women to go up and just go, whoa, that girl there, who is that? She is so hot. You know, pointing at my wife.
Of course. And,
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure.
I was following.
Thank you. Well, you did call me a fat roly-poly, so I'm not sure how you really perceive me. But, you know, the idea is that that's an opportunity, and it constantly sends such a great message. In Proverbs 31, 28-29, it says, her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, he praises her. I mean, isn't that cool? Mm. I mean, that's the opportunity. Again, if I don't see her value, I'm not going to do any of these things, which is why really this has to start from a recognition. Maybe you need to reacquaint yourself with this person. And I get, man, I certainly understand that there are people going, Smalley, shut up. You have no idea. You have no idea who I live with. You have no idea what he's done, what she's like. Hey, you know what? The God of this universe made your spouse in his image.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what's happened. It doesn't change how truly valuable they are. And if you want to inject change within your marriage, you can't control them. You can't change your spouse. But I tell you what, you can start by actively going, yeah, what is it? I'm going to reacquaint myself. There's a, remember the old group Journey? They had this great song called Faithfully. Mm. And there's a line in there that I love. It says that I get the joy of rediscovering you every day.
Very cool.
And I think that's it. That's saying, I know you're a valuable person. I know you change. And one, I want to rediscover you. I want to keep fresh what is true about you and how valuable you are. I want to rediscover that every day. And then I want to rediscover what you need and what's changed. And in this season, what's going on for you, and how could I meet whatever needs that you have. But that idea of rediscovering each other, that's value. See, that all stems from the spot that you matter. And so if you're saying, I have a hard time doing any of this stuff, and I don't feel like it, my heart's shut down, start today. Make a list, that cherish list. Just grab a pen, sheet of paper, and just really think, pray about it. Say, sometimes it's, you know, Lord, you know, I want to see Aaron through your eyes. When you look at her, she's your daughter. How do you see her?
That's so good.
That way. And then get that list and you look at it over and over and over again. And I'm telling you, it'll change. Your treasure is, there will your heart be also.
So good, Greg. And you're thinking about, as we approach this holiday season, we're celebrating Christ. We've commercialized it to no end. But you want to give Jesus a gift? Cherish the one you're married to. Truly, if you want to give him a gift that honors his heart, honor the one you're married to, whether they deserve it or not, because God's honored us when we didn't deserve it. And so you know, we're only better for this if we do this right. Will you pray for that person maybe who's weary in well-doing?
God, open the eyes of our heart. Mm-hmm. We not only want to see you, but give us your perspective of our spouse, Lord. Show us. It doesn't matter. What never changes the fact that they truly are valuable because you made each one of us in your image and you've placed this value within us. And Lord, just help us to see that better. Give us a new set of eyes. Give us the ability to notice and to watch and to be aware of, to seek out, pursue what is our spouse doing. And Lord, just help us do that. Thank you for modeling value towards us. Mm-hmm. God, you sent your son to die for us only because we are valuable to you. We want to be like you. Give us that ability. Lord, thank you for that idea of cherishing.
Amen. Thanks to you and to Aaron for all you guys do for marriage and family. Appreciate you so much.
Well, thank you.
Tease you a lot, but you know we love you.
I only know you love me because you tease me. So when you stop, I'm in trouble.
That's right. Then you know I'm mad at you.
Exactly.
I think you're coming back next week, right?
I am.
All right. Good. We'll look forward to that. Thanks for tuning in today. Remember this. The Lord wants you to last long and finish strong. He's the one who'll keep you strong to the end.